You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to Truthful Out Radio. Today's date is Friday the 2nd of August 2019. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting live at RadioAryan.com tonight because we have with us the producer of Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told, Communism by the Back Door, and the Freemasonic Victors of World War II, Mr. Dennis Wise. Dennis.
You want to sound calm?
You do. Collective. Calm, cool, collected. Entertain the people, that's your main objective. Talking about the war.
The last 5 days have been pandemonium.
It has, yes. We've had technical difficulties, communications difficulties, and we just got there at the last minute, didn't we?
As usual.
But we're here.
I still haven't finished part 20 yet. In fact, it got to a point where I ripped up half of it. Started again, and now it's looking good, but it still needs a bit of fussy. So when it's going to be up, I don't know.
Can we ask what the issue was with the footage that you removed?
Yeah, you certainly can. After 18 hours, three documentaries, which was possibly now the final episode, I mean, that's not for grabs. But if it is the final episode, it just wasn't a strong enough finish. I needed a stronger finish. And I finally got one.
Okay, so the finale just wasn't big enough.
Basically. No, I mean it just didn't come to the standard of the others.
Not enough fireworks there at the end. Well, I'm certainly looking forward to it now, Dennis.
Yeah, I think you'd be surprised.
You definitely whetted the appetite of listeners, I should imagine, for that. We've got some comments from listeners to begin with tonight as well. First comment comes from Anglo Falcon, and he's a real long time listener. He's been listening to us for since we started, I think, Dennis. He's always there in the chat room every week. And he says, can you ask Dennis, which do you think is more likely, that the globalist elite will take a peaceful route to a new world order, or that they will engineer a third world war to achieve their aims?
I think they have to have a third world war. If they're going to insist on banning Christianity, because obviously, you know, you've got a lot of Christians in Russia, plus a few others around the world, so I don't think it's all going to go quiet.
Do you think that's what they would prefer?
I'm not saying that's what they prefer, but I don't think there can be any other solution, because as far as we know, Christians and Christianity will not be allowed into the New World Order.
So you think a war is inevitable, really?
Unless they have a mass conversion of Christians, I think it has to be.
Because, you know, it seems to me like the liberal order is failing. It's falling apart. I mean, this is what Putin pointed out at the World Economic Forum, was that liberalism has run its course. It's failing. The people are revolting against it. The countries of Europe have been flooded with these foreigners that are committing all these crimes. And the people won't stand for it. So he was sort of hinting that there's going to be a revolution within our countries that will overturn this liberal order, in which case that would, you know, that would prevent a war, but that would be more
that
like
would
a...
solve the problem.
Yeah.
Whether or not you're capable of a revolution with no arms, I find difficult to
Could be some kind of internal change. Something like that. And there's also Pike's letter from years ago where he was talking about a third world war, wasn't he?
Yeah, I don't particularly trust that because they're easy to forge these, especially when, somebody turn of the century could have written that, you know what I mean? So I've got my doubts about Pike's predictions. He mentioned sort of we're going to put Muslims against Christians or whatever. To me, I don't know. I don't trust him. I don't trust
anything, a Freemason, to be honest. I might be wrong here, but I think that letter of his, I think it mentions Nazis in it, and the letter was supposedly written 60 years before then.
But that's what I'm trying to say. You know, it's easy to forge when, you know, things haven't happened yet.
Yeah, they do like to profit from these wars. But then again, I mean, we've pretty much... you know, we've got the New World Order here now. We know what it is. It's just that there are some parts of the world that aren't signed up to it.
Well, the guy who tried to debunk the greatest story ever told on the, I think it's Imgur or some of this website. I think we tackled it a long back. And he would kind of mock me, saying that I believe in the New World Order. And I said at the time, I don't think he heard George Bush at the time. He must have been deaf or something, because George Bush announced it.
Yeah, we're living in it. It just seems to, it evolves all the time, I guess. I mean, right from the Enlightenment, they thought that we're living in this progressive ideal, and it's just kept evolving since then. But it's been there some time.
What worries me is I watched the program last night, and it reminded me of an episode in Communism by the Back Door. And on this TV program last night, it shows Britain today, where you have people with tents on beaches because they've no housing. You've got immigrants coming into the country, taking that housing, and these people who were in these tents saying, well, yeah, you know, you've got to understand that, you know, they've had a hard time in their country. Totally brainwashed. But it reminded me of an episode in Communism by the Back Door when Bill Cooper was talking about Detroit. And Detroit at the time was in a real state. And it's in a bigger state today. And he actually said in that particular episode, it's not going to get any better. And I felt this for these people on this beach last night and the people in the food banks. I think 10 years ago, 25,000 were using food banks, 1.2 million using food banks now. It isn't getting any better.
Yeah, they just double down, don't they? They just double down and continue to make things all the worse, even when you show the evidence to them. And, you know, I mean, you can think of things like, well, you can point out the low IQ. You can point out from that low IQ with blacks, you've got a high rate of crime. You've got low educational attainment. So they're obviously not compatible with us. You show that to the government and they say, well, that means we need to be investing more money in these blacks to stop them from committing these crimes, and we need to have black judges so that they don't get sent to prison, and we need to lower the exam results so we can get them into top universities. And they double down on it. It's the same evidence that they show, that we show, and yet they look at it in a totally different way. It's like they're completely deluded, I think.
Well, what amazed me last night is the people who are all complaining, because I don't know if listeners know or not, the minimum wage is supposed to be £10 a week. This woman was actually cleaning a prestigious place in London, a car showroom. Cheapest car was 300,000. She was working there for £7 an hour. £10 an hour is the minimum wage. And when she complained about it, they turned around and said, oh, that minimum wage is £10, but it's up to the employers whether they want to pay it or not. So apparently, even that weren't binding.
And they can always turn around and say, well, if you won't do the job, we'll be able to find somebody else who will, and they'll be able to get some immigrant to do the job that is living 10 to a room, sending the money back to Pakistan or whatever, and they'll do the job for £5 an hour or less.
It always brings the wages down every time in mass immigration.
It just hurts everybody else. It helps the 1% and it harms the 99%. And we've all been so brainwashed, we go along with it. You know, the very people that it's hurting the most go along with it.
The point of our culture, I forgot to mention, right, where all these people who were complaining were white.
That's the saddest thing, isn't it? That just shows you how deep that brainwashing goes, how deep it goes. The very people that have been hurt the most are the ones cheering for this. And it's all the whites that you see on these counter demonstrations and in these Antifa groups that are arguing for more help for, you know, these other peoples. Who do they think is ever going to stand up for them? If they don't stand up for us, who else is going to stand up for us?
No. Yeah, it's not good.
Right, well, let's get into what Elena has to say on BitChute, because your BitChute channel is up and running now, isn't it? What are you up to, 19, chapter 19 on there?
Well, yeah, I was trying to upload 18 today, because I missed 18 now, and I put the wrong number one up, so I've got that sorted, the first one, right, but I haven't got 18 up yet, so I'll do that after. But yeah, Elena from BitChute, another almost fan of mine.
Yeah, you're starting to get a few comments there, I noticed. So we've got this one from Elena, and I've had to break it down because she's got quite a bit to say. And it is stuff that we've covered before, but we pick up new listeners all the time, and it's good to go over these things so that people remember them. And she says, how can it be said that Hitler was a Catholic? The fact is, many Catholics ended up in his work camps and they died. Maximilian Kolbe is just one example. So break it down, Dennis. So why is it you say Hitler was a Catholic when so many people say he was anti-Christian or he was pagan or whatever?
Well, I think the statement at the end of World War II, when Franco came out and said that Adolf Hitler, once he'd already died the son of the Catholic Church, which and died defending Christianity, and a lot of people, when I put that on the gravestone, never told, just couldn't understand what I was doing. But it was literally, that was put in a paper, a state-run paper, so Franco knew exactly what was going in there, and it's been debunked ever since, or ignored. And the problem is, you know, Christians today have got no idea who we're trying to exterminate. They don't even know that Christianity was at war in World War II. It's been so cleverly disguised. And so that's one instance at one end of the scale. At the other end of the scale, when he was a kid, his mother would be very Catholic. Now, I'm a Catholic, and I know the feelings that you go through being a Catholic, and the binding of it is unreal. So when he's got a devout mother who's Catholic as well, who he's got a picture of till the day he dies, he hangs on her in every word. And to me, that's another double dose of him wanting to be an altar boy, wanting to be a priest at some stage, and then apparently, you know, going into politics. So that's at the beginning, we have the end. And in the middle, if people can't see what Hitler was doing from 1933 till 1941, quietly and slowly gaining back all of Europe, all mainland Europe, by 1941 from the Rothschilds, who had banned the Pope in the Versailles Treaty, European countries were all run by Freemasons, and Hitler took it all back, as it says in the trailer I made a while back, took it all back, put in Christian leaders, and by that itself, it established the Third Holy Roman Empire. Not officially, because Stalin was about to invade, and so then they have to go into the Soviet Union, try and take him down, and we know they got bogged down there, and we know the ending. But everything he's done, apart from, you know, saving Spain as well, saving other countries from this Rothschilds Freemasonry, I've never seen a more Christian person.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, Dennis. If you're a Catholic, you're christened a Catholic, you're baptized a Catholic, you're confirmed a Catholic, and you're a Catholic unless the Church excommunicates you. You could be a non-practicing Catholic, I guess, or a non-church-going Catholic. But unless you renounce it, and I mean, I don't even know if you can renounce it. Can you renounce Catholicism? Is that a thing? Or
well,
does
I think
the Church have to do it?
And a couple of others, but not because of the faith. We spoke about that, didn't we?
I thought he renounced the Church. I thought he left the Church, yeah. But he didn't actually leave Catholicism.
No, maybe not. No, you could be right there. People got to understand that all these other religions like Orthodox Christianity and Protestants all came from the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church was the dominant religion of Christianity. Unfortunately, gone today, but that's another story. And all these breakaway groups were all from the Catholic Church. So, you know, the roots were there. And obviously, the threat of Bolshevism, everybody knew in Western Europe that day is going to come, and when it does come, it's going to come heavy. And the Pope knew that. And in a reply to somebody else who was having a go at me this week, I actually said to him, I've got to take all this research into consideration, knowing that Hitler knew the Bolsheviks were coming, and I'm pretty sure the Pope knew the Bolsheviks were coming. Now, what he was telling me, it looked like to me that he didn't think they thought anything about Bolshevism, which is ridiculous. And the Pope, for what anybody says, didn't denounce the Nazi Party, as proven by getting them all out of Europe. But in fact, what he did was asked to walk a tightrope when the United States joined the war. He had to look more neutral. But you can bet your bottom dollar, he didn't want Bolshevism, and that was coming. And the United States was helping it.
Yeah, that's the issue, isn't it? I mean, because it looked like he was helping them, you know, with by getting rid of the Center Party and, yeah. and backing them. And then the war starts, and then he writes this papal bull where he condemns Nazism. I think he condemns communism as well in that papal bull.
Well, he's just played ball, isn't it?
Yeah, and then people use that to say, well, the Pope was against them. But then at the end of the war, as you say, it was the Catholic Church that got them all out of Europe and in South America. And I'll just add something there when you're saying that it all came from the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church originally, in the first century, the Catholic Church comprised the Celtic Church and the Orthodox Church and what became the Roman Catholic Church. Christianity was one church together, and it was called the Catholic Church because it was, they both used the Old Testament. Yeah, the Old Testament and the New Testament. It was universally used, both of those, and they had the same doctrines and all the rest of it. And then it wasn't until the 11th century, I think it was in 1060 or 1050, there was a schism, and the Orthodox Church went one way and the Roman Catholic Church went the other way. And that's when the Roman Catholics were called the Roman Catholics. Before that, it was just all Catholic.
Yeah, so, I believe it. And then breakaways weakened the main body.
Yeah.
And like I said to this guy, because he mentioned Freemasonry, well, we had a couple of replies back and forth, and then the first one I mentioned Freemasonry, and he said, oh yeah, well, that's fair enough, Freemasonry, that's the enemy of mankind, you know, Hitler didn't just destroy Freemasonry because they were against Rome. I said, oh, that's fair enough, tell me one other institution whatever fought it.
Just the church, isn't it? Just the church. And
just the church.
And the old...
Now he's telling me he's an enemy of humanity, but can't see what's right in front of him.
And the Protestant Reformation as well, that was sponsored by the Jews. That weakened the church all the more.
That weakened the church, yeah.
That's why they were sponsoring it. Just this second bit here where she's saying about these Catholics that ended up in the work camps. I mean, we've covered this before as well, and there's two things to think about with this. The work camps were for communists and enemies of the state. So it didn't matter who you were. If you were a Catholic priest and you were speaking out against the National Socialist state, then you were an enemy of the state. So you were put in the camps. And it didn't matter if you were a Catholic, Lutheran, Jewish, or whatever, you would be put in the camps. And the second point to remember of that is that it was the liberal types, the progressive types, the communist types that were in the church that were put in the camps and removed from the church. So it was a purging of the church of the progressive elements, which have now taken
it over. The third point as well.
Go on.
Which Hitler brought up in a speech when he was being criticised by the Western powers for persecuting the Catholic Church. Then he explained why these people were in prison. They were told, you know, if you preach, you'll be fine. But if you want to go and start talking politically, especially the left wing, you're going to have problems. What Hitler actually said to the people like Roosevelt and Churchill who were having a go, where were you when Spain were having 9,000 priests being killed?
Good point. Yeah, the National Socialists were the defenders of the Christians and the Correct. Defenders of the Catholic priests in Spain against the Bolsheviks. Yeah. So that answers that.
So, I mean, you can lie; these lies can go on forever, but you're always going to find evidence to counteract it.
Her second point, she says, "What about the cruel human experiments? Later, America used these same diabolical scientists to experiment on unknowing young Americans." Well, we could take one instance of this. They supposedly used fluoride in the camps. That was untrue. They didn't use fluoride.
Well, I've used fluoride now.
They tested, you know, things out on their own Germans. They tested out stress conditions. But I don't think...
I wasn't sure. I think she was on about, the reason why they were hospitals at Auschwitz, not because for medical reasons, but for experiments, probably down that road.
Well, Mengele did a lot of experiments, but they were totally harmless. It was just collating information on twins and genetic research. And he's been slandered since then. But there weren't any experiments that were done, human experiments that were done that were harming people, as far as I'm aware.
That was used as an excuse, like I said, for the reason why hospitals were there, because you have to think of an excuse. Couldn't think of one for the swimming pool, so the idiot.
Right, so that's the excuse for why there's a hospital in the camps, is because they were doing these diabolical experiments, not that they needed a hospital, because they wanted to keep their workers healthy in case they got ill.
And babies were being born there.
Yeah, yeah. Now, the next one, she says, where did Hitler get all the money to finance his military and equipment? Was it not the Jew banksters, Rothschild and Prescott Bush, one of seven directors of Union Banking Corps, a New York investment bank owned by a bank controlled by the Tyson family, according to declassified National Archives documents reviewed by the Associated Press? This was all for their New World Order takeover.
So she's full of propaganda, and a sinker. Tyson, yeah, fair enough. He was a billionaire in Germany. Does he really want communism? Does he not? And the only person who can stop it is Hitler. So he backs Hitler. Falls out with Hitler later on. But I mean, yeah, fair enough. She's got a point there. But what's wrong with that? When she comes with the Bushes and everything else, I refuse to believe that, because the Bush family is a neocon family and they are followers of Trotsky and would have no point in funding Hitler. And when she says who funded him, I do believe the Catholic Church would have funded him. I don't think there's any problem with that one now. And also, you know, for all these historians and all these people who were writing books, Oxford people, you know, saying that this, that, and the other, Hitler was funded. Not one of them came up with on what we found in the speech by Untermeyer, when Germany was sending millions and millions to Germany, even though they couldn't pay back, not just the Hitler regime, but the Weimar before. So they're sending all these millions and millions in payments. And, you know, we know it's not because of the goodness of the heart. So obviously a bit more digging and you find out why.
So that was the Jewish bankers. They were sending money into Germany as part of the Dawes plan and the plan before that. And that was supposedly so that Germany would repay this money as the interest payments on the money that was demanded from them from the Versailles Treaty. And once Hitler got into power, that money was still being sent by these Jewish bankers into Germany. And Untermeyer was not happy with it because it wasn't coming back to them as interest. Hitler was using it for good things, reinvigorating the country. And the other point she makes, she says, what about Rothschild? She thinks the Rothschilds were funding Hitler. So you didn't.
Well, that's another one. I mean, that particular one I think is genius, because when people read and believe that, then they didn't step one step further to investigate Hitler. That just shut the door, which is exactly what the Rothschilds wanted.
Well, I mean, you don't have to look too far to find that the National Socialists made a film about the Rothschilds, exposing the Rothschilds, a movie, the equivalent of a Hollywood movie that was in the cinemas. Exposing what the Rothschilds did in Britain, how they pulled that scam about the war with Napoleon or whatever it is, and they knew what the outcome of the war was before the British did, because their spies could get back to Britain quicker enough, and Rothschild managed to sell all his shares or buy all the shares or whichever one it was, and he crashed the Bank of England. And after crashing the Bank of England...
He ordered everybody to sell the shares, fooling everybody to sell theirs, and then picked up theirs via, you know, proxies to make a fortune.
And bought everything. And I think the movie goes right back to one of these Viscounts, Landgraves, they were called, in Germany. And he's being lent all his money by this Rothschild. And it details how the whole empire was built up and usury and all the rest of it. And they'd hardly be doing that if they were funded by them.
And funny enough, this guy again, who was having some banter with me, he actually mentioned the Rothschilds being practitioners of the Jewish faith, which they're not. They don't practice Judaism. In fact, they use the Jews, and a lot of Jews don't even want to go down into Israel, but they are practicing Satanists, which a lot of the bankers are.
I think there's little difference between Judaism and Satanism anyway, to be honest.
Well, yeah, you could be right.
Yeah, there's a lot of demonology in it, and a lot of them admit that
they're literally... Definitely, the Talmudic sound of it all.
Angel of Light and all the rest of it, and the crossover with Freemasonry and the Kabbalah, different ways of... Different ways of doing Satanism, I guess you could describe it as. So he certainly wasn't funded by Rothschild. So her next point is, Hitler, as most dictators, completed the task presented to him and later was liquidated. Germany and the globe lost, except for the Zionist Jews, who wanted to take over the world. Well, why would somebody be doing... If, like most dictators, he completed the task and was then liquidated, do you think he was that dumb? And he thought, well, never mind, I'll just be liquidated at the end of it, but I'll just carry out this task anyway, even though I'm going to die at the end of it, and they're going to kill me at the end of it. That doesn't make sense. And when they do kill these dictators, it's like Gaddafi and like Saddam Hussein. Originally, they were working for the CIA, and as soon as they had enough power, they broke away from the CIA and they started doing their own thing, their own nationalist thing, and then the New World Order had them killed. But it was because they'd broken away, because they were going against the New World Order.
Yeah, I think in Libya's case, he was trying to get the African countries to back the gold dinar. And certainly, the way it was going, I don't think the bankers would have had much chance, especially with all the Arab nations signed up and then half the African. Would have been a problem to them.
I mean, what was this task that Hitler was tasked with? Because what he did, he liberated most of Europe from the bankers and was turning the countries nationalist, where they put the needs of the nation before the greed of the individual.
The bottom line to me is that he educated us. I honestly believe if Hitler hadn't been around, we would be no wiser today.
That's a good point. That's a good point as well. I mean, it's a good example. But the other thing is, if Hitler hadn't done what he did, communism would have come in and taken North Europe. It already took, you know, what it did, Russia, but Stalin would have made his way in if Hitler hadn't have defended Northern Europe from him.
And the other thing,
and we would have, what we've got today, the way the world is today, it would have been like that 70 years ago, rather than taking it until now, because he defended half of Europe, basically.
Yeah. And you know yourself, the difficulty you've had trying to find that poster, which depicts a Christian army going into a Soviet Union.
Yeah. Yeah, they try to hide all of that, try to hide all this information, and they put out spurious information. A lot of spurious information. A lot of what I see, Dennis, I think what they try to cover up, the crimes that the Jews actually did against Germany, they don't want people to know about that. So what they'll put out is that the National Socialists were against the Jews because they thought they were the Jews of the Old Testament, and bringing up things that happened in the Old Testament and using that as an excuse.
Yeah.
And I've seen quite a lot of that.
The other excuse for that as well is, it's like I said a little bit early on, that it's been covered up so unbelievably well that, you know, a war which has over 60 million dead Christians, and since that war ended, Christianity has gone into the... You know, if you can criticize any religion, Christianity is the one you don't get any stick over. It's obviously in a decline, and people still can't see it, still refuse to admit it. And obviously the demonizing of Hitler doesn't help, because a lot of Christians believe the Holocaust, and they'll say there's no way with Holocaust, you know, a Christian, because he did the Holocaust. Well, that's just another, you know, bit more ammo to the Jew gun.
They make Hitler out to be anti-Christian, and then they say that he was anti-Christian because he was anti-Jewish, and they try to link the two together, which is obviously of benefit to the Jews, and they don't point out the promotion of abortion, the promotion of homosexuality, the intermarriage, the mocking of Christianity that was going on by these Jews. That was a large part of it, because Germany yeah. was a central part of Christendom. It was a very, very Christian country. So to portray them as being anti-Christian, we know it isn't true, but people today, that you know, they don't think twice about it. And that covers up the actual crimes that the Jews were responsible for, crashing the banks, buying up all the farms, buying up all the land, all of this sort of stuff is covered up. And they'll try and say, well, it was just because he was anti-Christians and he was anti the Jews. And I've seen like evidence being put there for what Hitler thought about the Jews. And it's just attacking things from the Old Testament, which is just Christianity, not attacking the Jews.
You've touched on this before, and I mentioned this to this guy again. The papal bulls, what the church did against the Jews, the church put them in ghettos and kept them in ghettos to keep them away from Christians. And when Hitler came to power, his laws were almost identical to the Catholic bulls of 300 years previous, a bit more updated. And that's why the Jews went back in the ghettos again, because of what they do when they're out and about rampant and free. It's this connection with Hitler and the Catholic Church.
Even that Jewish star that they were told that they had to wear, yes. that came from the church. The church said that they had yes. to wear an item of clothing to identify them so that people could tell that they were different to other people, so that they could be wary and they wouldn't trust them in the same way that they would trust one of their own kind. So even
half the Catholics don't even know that, because they will criticise the Nazi regime for doing that, or humiliating the Jews, and they won't even realise the Catholic Church did it, not for a humiliating reason, but to keep everybody safe from their antics.
That was it. It was to keep people safe and separate. And that's why the Jews were kept apart. They were kept apart in their own area. And the church was very good to them, because they said, well, you can live in your own area and you can essentially follow your own rules in your own area. But you have to follow our Christian rules when you're in our Christian area. And they also said, well, you can't marry Christians either. So even the Nuremberg race laws were based on the Roman Catholic Church's laws against intermarriage. And I think the intermarriage law came about in the 4th or the 5th century. And there was also, they couldn't own any Christian slaves. So Jews would not be allowed to employ Christians either, because that would have been seen as, you know, really demeaning to have Christian working
for Jews.
I think
it's over 100 countries that were kicked out. So, I mean, by 5th century, probably 50 countries that kicked them out. And the landlord can't always be wrong.
No, definitely not. Well, the final bit she has to say here, she says, by 1948, the Jews got their secular state of Israel, still financed by Christian blood and money to this day. The Jews got their China and Russia to play out their chess game of world dominance with control of the media, education, and churches. The invasion of non-Christians from the third world countries is an undeclared hidden war. So much for Christian Hitler, that helped the enemy, the Jews, to rule over Christians. The endless reminder of their so-called Holocaust and victimhood has changed our laws, corrupted our judicial system, and brainwashed our youth. And as I say, well, if we didn't have Hitler, we would have been communists for the last 70 years.
Well, Russia was already under Jews. It wasn't the end of World War II. They were already after World War I.
and China, I guess. I mean, the Jews were in China, weren't they? They had their opium wars, didn't they?
Well, but the big betrayal was Chiang Kai-shek, who was obviously a nationalist fighting communism, and America dumped him and backed Chairman Mao. Surprise, surprise.
But the Jews were well established in China by the time of the Second World War, because they'd got them all hooked on opium. And Hitler was all of this. Hitler was exposing all of this, and had and probably the most success in actually getting rid of them and turning the country around that we've seen since, I don't know, when England kicked the Jews out. I mean, we had Merry England, and that was back in 1290.
12 years they held their freedom.
Yeah.
The Germans.
12 years. I guess, what did England have? 12, 9, England must have had 300 or 400 years.
Yeah, they probably did, But finally succumbed again, thanks to Cromwell.
Yeah, that was centuries ago. So I hope that helps Eleanor out to side to this.
This is no coincidence. All these things what we're bringing up with between Hitler and the Catholic Church, it's not coincidence. It's not made up. You know, they have the same goals.
Well, I've got also got a comment here from Campesino Blanco, and he left it here this morning, and we were going to answer it, but we're going to leave that one until next week.
Yeah, I have studied that. I was going to use it, believe it or not, in an episode of Secret Masonic Mystery. So I do know about it. I know quite a bit about it, but it's been a while. And I couldn't find the time to research today. So rather than just, you know, answer it just a bit airy-fairy, I'd sooner do a decent job next week.
All right. Well, let's get into this interview with an American soldier then. You found this interview. Where did you find this interview, Dennis? Did someone send it in to you?
No, this came from the same place of the Gorings and the other daughters of Himmler.
Because the difference is, I mean, it's not somebody that's pro-National Socialism. It's,
no, this is the other side.
Yeah, it's somebody that fought against the National Socialists.
Yeah.
Just let me cough a minute.
Which I thought would be, for a change, let's just see the other angle.
Yeah, well, it's pretty interesting stuff because it's self-incriminatory, basically. And first off, he's talking about the Allied shooting of prisoners. This is the soldier talking here. He says, you have to understand the strain combat puts on a soldier. When someone has been trying to kill you, then surrenders, you are angry. I never did this, but I saw plenty of friends do it. They would sometimes joke that they were saving more food for us, but it was just combat nerves that caused it. You might have heard that men from my regiment shot Italian and German prisoners after we captured an airfield that was a hard fight. I did not see it with my own eyes, so I cannot say what happened. They could have tried to escape or attack the guards. They were all acquitted, but for one NCO. So who knows? Those damn Italians were sneaky and fought very hard, causing many GIs to die. So we were not kind to them when they surrendered. We were angry to learn that the Germans had evacuated most of their army to the mainland, and when we learned of this, a couple of German stragglers were shot, when I could see that they were trying to surrender. I believe Canadian troops next to our position did this. So what are you saying there? I mean, the Germans were accused of this, weren't they? This was one of their war crimes, was that they shot prisoners.
It's the old thing, Victor's... tell the story and everything what the Allies did, the Germans carried the camp for.
And he moves on to the liberation of France. And he says, I enjoyed the weather. For the last 2 years, I was in warm tropical weather with nice water, nice girls and plenty to eat. Except when we were fighting, it was like being on a peacetime vacation. I was a little miffed that we were heading north into France as I was losing the warm weather, I remember thinking. My unit was sent into the south of France to aid the soldiers fighting in the north. We encountered French soldiers who put up token fights, causing few casualties. The resistance was very active here, doing a lot of reconnaissance for us and getting the Vichy army to surrender. We saw some evidence of Nazi crimes here. Resistance soldiers who were sabotaging rail lines and enemy installations had been captured, we were told, and then they shot them. Men and women were seen strewn where they fell. As retribution, the Marquis shot several Germans we captured after we turned them over to them. It was a nasty business, but that was war. I saw some of the women who had relations with German soldiers being beaten and shaved. It was hard to watch, as one was pretty much murdered right in front of a large crowd. We were under strict orders not to interfere, as the French wanted to be able to root out traitors on their own. To this day, I still see their pretty faces covered in blood crying as they were punched and kicked by the resistance members. One had a baby with her still suckling as she was being pushed to the ground and kicked, yet no one stood up to protect her. I had to turn and walk away as the crowd jeered and cheered at what they saw as vile whores. This scene repeated itself in many southern towns we went into. Now, there's a couple of things there. When he's talking about the resistance there, he tells us that these are terrorists, basically. He calls them resistance soldiers, the French, with quote marks around it, resistance. And the soldiers were sabotaging railway lines and enemy installations. And then when they're captured, they shot them. Well, of course they shot them. They were terrorists. They weren't entitled to the Geneva Convention.
And he not blowing a railway line up was a marker.
Yeah, but you know, these guys deserved to be shot. They were terrorists. There was an armistice on at the time. It was the equivalent of the Irish going into Northern Ireland and blowing the place up and killing loads of people and saying, oh, yeah, that's perfectly fine. It's not fine because there's an armistice. That's what's keeping the peace there. That's what was keeping the peace in France.
Yes.
Yet he thinks this is okay. These resistance were just terrorists, and they weren't French. The French people were in France, and they were quite happy with what they had. So he doesn't really. He's confirming what was, what the Germans said, that these saboteurs were blowing things up, and they were terrorists. And then he's got the liberation of Dachau that he talks about. He says, by April 1945, we were in Munich. In addition, orders came to oversee the handing over of a concentration camp, Dachau. We were one of the first units to enter, and what we saw was beyond description. Bodies everywhere and sick, laying out in the open. I heard other soldiers talking about a train that was next to the camp. It was full of dead and sick. I left to go check it out when I heard machine gun fire. Some of our men had shot the German survivors while they were lined up against a wall. I had no part in the shootings. I was off looking for the train. I remember the train had many cars to it, and I could see it had been strafed. I overheard an officer talk to one of the wounded, who had been on the train for days. He said German planes had attacked the train. But by April 1945, that was impossible. I could tell that it was our free-roaming 51s and 47s who were looking for targets of opportunity, as I found a spent .50 bullet in one of the cars. To them, this was just another Nazi train. They did not know inmates were on board. I mean, what do they think was on board? Civilians are going to be on a train, aren't they? And they're still bombing them.
Well, the shots are going to bother civilians, even before all this.
And, shooting these German survivors, just line them up against the wall and shoot them. And he says, well, when we got there, it was all full of the dead and sick. Who do they think caused that? All the dead and the sick in the camp after bombing the trains. He continues, the train engineers and guards were long gone. Later, a prisoner who spoke broken English told me the train stopped often and the trip took days. The guards had tried to get the prisoners water when there was a creek or a stream, but they could find no food. Our medical teams were yelling at us to stay away as they feared some prisoners could have typhus, which was contagious. I am glad they warned us, as I was ready to start helping prisoners off the train and give them food and water. Just another thing that I'll add there as well. I mean, he's already learned that these so-called, these prisoners that were on the train, they lied to him. They said it was German planes that had attacked the train. So he's already learned that these people are liars. And he continues, the survivors were begging us for water as they had not had any for days. Our medics radioed in for lots more help as this was going to be a huge task to undertake. All I could do was sit and watch. I threw my canteen to a prisoner, but a medic yelled at me and the prisoner, saying he could drink too much and die. They were yelling at all of us to get back and not to feed anyone. Our officers were in the camp trying to organise as much as they could, so the NCOs had their hands full. And didn't that actually happen, Dennis? They fed these starving people and it killed them all.
It killed them, yeah. There was an interview by Ernst Sundel. And I might release that as an extra bonus part as well, because it is a medic, a British medic, who was at the camp at the time, arrived with the British, and tells it like it is. And there's no denying that there was no gas in, but prisoners were dying even when the British took over.
And he continues, it was an awful sight, very surreal, dead all around. Luckily, they did not smell yet, as it was cool. I later heard that there were about 2,000 pulled off the train, and these poor people were inmates from camps in Western Germany that we liberated. The Germans took them to help with war production. I saw dead Germans scattered around too. Sadly, a few nurses fell victim to the rage of the inmates. Mostly it was SS men, as there was some type of SS hospital nearby. The wounded were pulled out and beaten by the inmates. As far as the numbers, I do not remember, but it had to be more than 100. They were scattered all over the campgrounds. The inmates got to them before we did and killed many. The guards actually surrendered to the inmates first, I was told, asking for fair treatment. But once they handed over their weapons, all bets were off. I remember looking at the bodies of the SS soldiers by the wall. They were a mix of old and young. There were perhaps 75 or so, maybe more. A machine gun had been used, and I could see the pile of spent shells. And just think about that. The guards surrendered to the inmates. Now, they wouldn't have been doing that if they'd been mistreating them, would they?
Well, not only that, they surrendered. So, you know, rules of war, I mean, if there's going to be anybody executed, there's going to be a trial. Obviously, there's no trial here.
Really, they just let the inmates did this. It was the inmates that then should have been taken on a trial.
Yeah, the ones who got shot as well by the machine guns.
And they were saying that these people who came in on the trains, don't forget also we're told that these Germans, they sort of kidnapped these prisoners from the eastern camps and brought them west. But what they were doing was preventing these prisoners from being taken by the communists. They were saving them.
Yeah, it makes you wonder why they bothered, doesn't it, really? But another thing that is very rarely touched on, again, it was mentioned by this medic, was at the end there, the German staff, I don't know whether you can remember seeing the pictures of them throwing these bodies into pits where they died of typhus. They had no kind of protective gear on them. But they were given safe haven if they were to help dispose of the bodies. So the disposal of the bodies were filmed disposing the bodies and then executed.
I dare say they used the film as well and said these were the evil Nazis. This is what they were doing with these prisoners before we got there.
That's right.
He continues, he says, I will tell you a sad story that I know. Before any American units arrived, the camp inmates revolted and broke out of the camp. They went into the town and attacked anyone they could find, killing a few civilians. The German guards had been disarmed, and those who were left alive begged us to stop the inmates in the town. We could hear gunfire, and our recon unit went further into Dachau to see what was happening. Turned out these prisoners fired on Americans, thinking they were German. They were then recaptured and brought back to the camp. I was there when they brought them back. They had taken the guns from the guards and were trying to find the bank nearby. We thought it was funny justice, so they were released back into the camp so they could then be registered and released. So what were they trying to do? They were trying to rob a bank.
I mean, well, Hitler said, didn't he, that if by some chance there was a riot at these camps towards the end of the actual ending of the war, then everybody has to be shot, because he refused to allow these people to go into the nearby towns and cause destruction of the German population. But obviously, you know, the guards were disarmed, couldn't stop them. And this is exactly what they did.
I mean, they're hardened criminals, aren't they? They're terrorists, Bolsheviks, perverts, nutters, crazies. Yeah. They weren't put in there just because they followed another religion.
Exactly.
And then he talks about the gas chambers. And he says, I will say from what we know today, the Germans got what they deserved. They put these people in camps for no reason at all, then went on to kill them without mercy. I saw the gas chamber at the camp. The ovens still had ashes in them from the bodies. An inmate labelled as a Jewish communist by his colours on the uniform told us the Nazis killed hundreds a day and had them all burned by the evening. That way there was no trace. They were gassed, burned, and then it started over. The press was brought in to document this so the world would see. People say today it never happened. Luckily, we have the pictures and movies to prove that it did. We even saw the soap and lampshades the OSS brought in to show everyone. Now, that OSS, that's the psych warfare division, isn't it? Psychological warfare? Yeah. These were all props that they brought in. That he must have seen. And this communist, this Jewish communist, it tells you, was telling him that they'd killed hundreds a day, and the evidence that he pointed to was ash in the cremation oven, which is, you know, that's not proof of gassings, is it?
They did burn
cremation,
you know, clothes, didn't they? Covered, you know, with lice and disease. So, you know, could possibly be from the clothing, but as we're about to find out.
Well, probably from the people that died of typhus. They had to get rid of those bodies pretty quick. That's what those cremation ovens were there for. If somebody died of typhus, otherwise you could make everybody really sick. They had to get rid of those bodies quick. I mean, that's not some conspiracy or some way of burning these bodies as quick as they can to hide the evidence. It's just a medical need to do that, hygiene.
Yeah.
He said, we made the Germans come and see what they did to these people. Some are in disbelief, and some said we had staged this. They were Nazis who were then sent to the camps for investigation. These people were made to bury the dead. They complained about not wanting to get sick and all that, but we had no sympathy for them. We felt that if they got sick, it would just be payback for the crimes their leader did to these poor people. One woman who got a rifle butt to her face said to our German Jewish medical officer that the Jews had brought this on and that the Allies had caused the deaths. It was on May the 1st we learned Hitler was dead, and by May the 8th, it was all over. The war was won. And it's very strange that he's seen what these people are like. He's seen them trying to rob a bank. He's seen them shooting people in the back. And then he says, well, this was, the Germans were horrible to them for no reason. And he's seen that there is a reason.
The problem is, before they got to Germany, there were a lot of them were, you know, covering propaganda from America and from Britain. Even. So, you know, by the time they've landed, they're out to kill what moves.
And it shows you that, you know, the Germans were saying, well, look, this is staged. This isn't what went on there.
Yeah.
And you can see that on some of the faces in the movies, can't you? You can see that they're like, well, this isn't us. We wouldn't do something like this.
Plus, they brought the Hollywood directors in as well, but that doesn't help the cause, you know.
And we know they let people into these camps, didn't they? They let Himmler's daughter in. She was able to just walk around these camps because they originally wanted to show them off because they were a success. They want to say, look at the successful way that we deal with the people that we have problems with in society. We rehabilitate them so that they're able to go back out and be useful, productive members of society. They wanted to showcase these this way of doing things originally. You know, we were talking, weren't we, about the homosexuals, and they were getting them to sleep with Russians. Prostitutes and trying to fix them, basically, trying to put them right. And that's what this was originally about, and that the work will set you free. They wanted to teach people to take pride in their work and have enjoyment from working and not want to take from other people, because they were looking at the nation as a whole.
The problem they had, especially the greatest story I've told, the footage was from outtakes of Spielberg's Holocaust movie. They were talking to Jews, and some Jews were being totally honest and saying, yeah, we had Christmas pantomimes, we had camp money, swimming pools, football teams. So all that obviously was cut out of Spielberg's film. Somebody got hold of the outtakes, and obviously I was going to use what I could. And so, you know, you've got actual Jews now saying they had an orchestra. Now, this all does not add up to what we would imagine a death camp. And I can remember a film coming out, I think it was A Boy in Pyjamas or something like that, and the director's got actually dealt with why there was football pitches. Wasn't a particularly good answer, but you know, they must have felt the need to answer it, because as the years went by after the war, even with the transfer agreement, that came out in 1986, just to think of some kind of idea of why that happened. You know, Hitler was part of the conspiracy. And as these things unravel, you know, 20, 30 years on, the hospitals, et cetera, you know, or the most being used for experiments, they have to think of these ideas. And, you know, but it's pretty obvious after a while, you know, football pitches, swimming pools, hospitals, brothels, is this a death camp?
Well, the way they try to get away with that is they try and say, oh, well, that was just for the prisoners of war, the British prisoners of war. That was just for the foreigners. But there was nothing keeping these places separate from them.
Exactly.
And it was a work camp. They wanted people to be working on things for the war effort. And they wanted to keep them happy, and they paid them money. And we've been told now, they admit the soap and lampshades was false. So where he says that we even saw the soap and lampshades the OSS brought in to show everyone, that should discredit all of it.
Yeah, that's apparently it still means. I went on the internet a while back, and some guy was teaching some school kids. He was still giving it lampshades, even though Holocaust Museum itself has debunked it.
Well, he continues, he says, my company moved into Munich and I was awestruck at the destruction our bombers had wrought on the cities. Munich was a shell of a city. The stench was awful, as the dead had not been fully recovered. I again was astonished to see the amount of foreigners in the country. Special centres were created to get them back to their homeland, but many did not want to return. Some had to be forced, as it was part of the agreement with Russia. At this stage, I was ready to go home. I had seen enough war and killing. My regiment stayed on occupation duty for a few months, and then it was discharge and home. And that, you know, that was the reason for the war. These people didn't want to go back to Russia. Germany was liberating these people.
Yes.
Until this point.
Yes.
And he says about the terror bombs. You know, it was all civilians in the city, the whole city of Munich. It wasn't a military installation. It's a city full of people.
Yeah.
Well, we've got one final document here to get into. And this comes from the Allied Military Police Headquarters from Vienna, January the 10th.
Which was sent to me by some kind of person.
Yeah, January the 10th, 1948. I was going to ask you where it came from. So this was just sent in to you, was it?
I get bits and bats. Since we've been banned off YouTube, people obviously have that knowledge of your work and if they find anything, because they're researching themselves all the time. This was a Spanish lady.
Well, this is from the Military Police Headquarters in Vienna, January the 10th, 1948, memo number 31/48. The Allied Committee of Inquiry has to date proven that no poison gas was ever used to kill prisoners in the following concentration camps: Bergen-Belsen, Buchenwald, Dachau, Flossenbürg, Gross-Rosen, Mauthausen, and satellite camps: Natzweiler, Neuengamme, Niederhagen, Wevelsburg, Ravensbrück, Sachsenhausen, Stutthof, Theresienstadt. In all cases where gassings were alleged, it could be proven that torture was used to extract confessions, and witnesses have lied. Any former inmate who, during their debriefing, continues to allege that poison gas was used to murder people, in particular Jews, are to be reported to this office, and if they insist on lying further, they are to be charged with perjury. Signed by a Major Miller, commanding officer, Allied Military Police, Vienna, witnessed by Lieutenant Lachaut, MP. And there's a note here, Auschwitz was not included in this camp list, as it was under the jurisdiction of the Jewish Bolshevik Soviets and not the Allies. So that's all the camps that the Allies had control over. No gassings.
And we have to believe the same people what lied about Katyn, what raped 2 million German women, and dressed up as SS to kill the Ukrainian villages, blame it on the SS, in the Torchman laws.
Is that acknowledged in the official version that these gassings only went on in the eastern camps, the ones that were under the Soviets at the end of the war?
Yeah, this was realised. I'd heard it's been realised by the 70s that no gassings ever took place in the western camps. But obviously, you know, they're saying it in the east, but they won't allow it to be investigated, so they're still believing that it is.
And of course, it was in Auschwitz that the Soviets tried to sort of make up some new death camp facilities, didn't they, with that chimney that they put on the outside.
Yeah, Obama at one point, coming in by the back door, actually talking about his grandfather liberating Auschwitz, and after he came back home, went up in the attic for 6 months, he wouldn't come out, he'd seen so much horror, and forgetting that the Americans were nowhere near Auschwitz when they were liberated.
actually liberated by the Russians. They put holes in the roof, didn't they? They dug.
Yeah,
made some holes in the roof.
Built a false chimney and holes in the roof, which is the worst blasting I've ever seen. I mean, if a German did that, he'd probably commit suicide.
And just the idea of what those holes were used for is laughable, isn't it? Apparently, the cyanide pellets were just thrown in through these holes in the roof, and they just magically gassed everyone. It's a ludicrous story. It's an absolutely ludicrous story, and that's why they have to have laws in 27 EU countries to prevent people from
looking into it. It's the only law for any historic events. It makes you got to think about that.
And at least we don't have those laws in Britain. I'm very thankful for that.
Not yet, we don't. No.
So So we can be proud of that at least. Anyway, we've come to the end of the podcast, Dennis. So thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We'll be back next week with more Truthful Out Radio for you. And of course, we do hope you have a great weekend ahead of you.